This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. And for many of us, a glowing blue light is the first thing we see in the morning and the last thing we see at night. We scroll through our feeds before we brush our teeth or get ready for the day ahead. And as we gaze into our phones, we may get a rush when an Instagram pic hits double-digit likes or when a Facebook post gets a few shares. Our devices have become our constant companions, and in some ways they've turned into mirrors for our carefully constructed identities. Meanwhile, the free time that we spend with our own thoughts and emotions has slipped away. Manoush Zomorodi knows this too well. She is the host of the WNYC tech podcast Note to Self, and her new book is called Bored and Brilliant: How Spacing Out Can Unlock Your Most Productive and Creative Self. Manoush is going to be speaking next week at the James B. Hunt Library at NC State in Raleigh, but first joins me on the program. Manoush Zomorodi, hey. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Great to be here, Frank.
Tell us how you got onto this whole idea and what this project was all about.
Yeah, well, it always starts when you have a personal problem, right? So for me, it was a couple years ago sitting down and trying to come up with some good ideas for the show. And for some reason, I felt this mental block, and it was different than like writer's block. It was like almost a desert in my brain. There was nothing there, a little bit of barrenness. And so I sort of thought back, you know, when was the last time I had my best ideas? When was I really most creative? And I thought back, and it was really before I'd had my smartphone, when I would push my kids' stroller for miles and miles and not look at my phone at the same time, just sort of stare into the distance or wait to get a cup of coffee without checking Twitter, or sit on the subway without making sure I was being productive and answering emails. And so I started to think like, wow, you know, I haven't been bored basically since I have gotten an iPhone. And then it started to make me wonder, like, is that a good thing that I've never been bored, or could that be actually a bad thing? Like, what happens in our brains when we do get bored? And I guess more importantly, what could be happening to our brains if we never get bored?
Well, and the question is that really boredom, or that stream of consciousness kind of creativity, a sort of foment that is not at all boredom, but it doesn't seem like you're, but it seems a lot like not doing anything, a bit like fishing, I suppose.
Yeah, well, that is the fishing, the rabbit hole that I fell down, which was talking to neuroscientists and cognitive psychologists and understanding that when we get bored, or we're not doing focused thinking, we're folding the laundry or walking down the street or we're just lounging, we activate a network in our brain called the default mode. And this is exactly as you say, it is a gateway to original thinking, to mind wandering, to daydreaming, and a place where we do our most original thinking and get our best ideas, and also do something called autobiographical planning, where we look back at our lives and make a narrative of it and decide what we want to do going forward and figure out the steps that we'll need to take to do that. So, you know, pretty basic, fundamental, important things going on when we spend time in the default mode of our brain.
Now, this can be finding this default mode, or I should say being distracted from it in your job, having a tech podcast, having to keep on top of tech trends. What an occupational hazard, huh?
Well, for sure. But, you know, I thought, well, is it just me? And that is also the beauty of hosting a tech podcast. You can ask your audience, what do you guys think? And everyone was like, yes, I am feeling this way too. I feel I have this yucky feeling and I don't know why. And so, and that is where the project came from. I did was like, well, what do you guys think, listeners? Shall we, for 1 week, let's try to change our smartphone habits to see if using our phones differently will indeed jumpstart our creativity and help us feel like we get back more time to think. And so, you know, I kind of thought, okay, maybe a couple hundred people will do this with me, but 20,000 people signed up for that week in 2015. And the book is based on the daily exercises that we did that week and what we discovered, but it's taken it a step further. I've taken what I've learned from that week with my listeners and added much more research and talked to a lot more technologists and marketers about how they work as well to capture our attention every moment of the day.
Tell us more about the challenges in Bored and Brilliant that you actually put out to these this army of the willing that you assembled.
Yeah. So the first one, and you know, To those of you who are listening and thinking, ugh, what is wrong with these people? I would just love to say there is someone around you who is struggling to manage their smartphone habits. It might be your spouse, a child, a parent, someone you work with. The reach is real. Mm-hmm. So number one, what we want you to do is observe your own behavior. But what we realized is that we think, oh, I only check my phone, like, I don't know, 5-10 times a day. And that is totally just not true, patently false, because the first time around, we actually partnered with some apps to measure people, how many minutes they spent a day on their phone and how many pickups they did every day. So I figured, you know, I was pretty generous. I said, I think I pick up my phone 30 times a day. And Frank, I was actually picking up my phone over 90 times a day. Mm-hmm. Just, and what you realize is, like, you walk into the elevator, you look at your phone. You walk out of the elevator, you look at your phone. You wake up, you look at your phone. You leave the house, you look at your phone. And I think what we don't, it's become sort of a physical reflex for people. And so really for us, the first step is seeing what your baseline is. And, you know, yeah, it's kind of ironic asking people, you know, if they want to download an app to maybe use their apps less. But I really feel like you have to meet people where they are.
Satan cannot bring down Satan, as they say.
Well, yeah, fire with fire.
But what about, and you talked about this, first of all, the startling, you know, revelation that not only do you pick it up, and of course, this is discreet looks, like the number of times you actually pick it up and look. The total amount of time that you spend gazing into this mirror, you know, that would also astound us. But what does it do? Because you did talk to experts, neuroscientists, who are trying to figure out what this new way of attending the world, this mediated view of the world, is doing to us. What did they tell you?
Well, for example, one psychologist I spoke to, Scott Barry Kaufman, he said, you know, every day we are given a limited amount of dopamine. And we think of dopamine as the pleasure sort of thing. But really what it is it's a neurotransmitter that makes us seek novelty, right? And so do you want to spend the finite amount of dopamine that you get every single day in your brain? Do you want it to spend it on creating something new in your life? Maybe that's a new idea or a new way of solving a problem or a new way of helping your child make a friend at school or whatever. Or do you want to spend it looking for to see if you got more Instagram likes? So basically, he was saying, you know, we're humans. We're not like computers. We don't have infinite RAM. This is it. You get a bit every day. And so you have to make a choice. And I think from what having talked to the scientists, it's certainly this idea that we are asking people earlier and earlier to do self-regulation, right? You know, when I was a 12 or a 13-year-old, I did not have a powerful, powerful tool in my hand that connected me to the globe. And so we're asking kids to make choices about how they spend their time and decide what their values are at a very early age. And then they're looking up and they're seeing that their parents can barely put down their phones either. And marketers are the first to say, you know, this is our job. If I don't grab your attention, somebody else is going to. And so that is what I have to do.
Well, and give you that jolt of dope. I mean, here's the thing. If you think about the question, you say, well, how do you want to get it? Well, if allowing my mind to wander, let's say, produces nothing, then I'm not going to get that happy feeling that I get when 40 likes for my picture of me in, you know, in Disney World.
Sure.
Oh, that felt good. And if I'm in the hospital and I get to push the button every time I feel bad, I'm just going to push that button and I'm not going to hope that maybe I'll get better in a week, which is what mind wandering, you know, offers the possibility of sort of no result. So, I mean, well, in terms of asking the question, it's a tough call, right? It's not an easy answer to give, it seems to me.
And I think what you're describing, Frank, is precisely the reason why I really wanted to use the word boredom and bored. People said to me, they're like, why do you have to use such a negative word? Who wants to be bored? And I kind of felt like, well, no, actually, let's lean into that negativity. It doesn't always feel good to be bored. You do have to feel uncomfortable or think about an argument you had yesterday or dive into some deep issues to get to the good stuff. You know, one woman told me that she had a big old cry in the Whole Foods parking lot in her car, but she kind of needed to do it because she needed to figure out what was going on in her life. And she wouldn't have done that if she'd been checking Instagram, which is what she usually would have been doing. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, confronting things that make us uncomfortable Look, it's the American right to happiness, but right. But I think we're giving ourselves short shrift in some ways.
Now you talk about it. I'm going to stick with this word boredom because actually you traced its first use back to 1953 in Charles Dickens' Bleak House. Tell us more about that, and again how this word evolves for you, and what you would like us to think about as we contemplate our use of social media.
Yeah, 1853. I would
1853,
say
1853. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Boredom, that's the first time that we sort of see the word bored being used. And I think a lot of people trace that to the Industrial Revolution, this idea that machines started to take over. People had more free time. They had more time to hang out, get bored, try not to be bored. But actually, speaking to linguists, this idea of boredom goes by many names. So ennui is what the French like to call it, or idolism is Kierkegaard's favorite way of saying it. And they all sort of talk about different ways that it can be very negative in some ways, this sort of dissatisfaction with life. But as speaking to researchers now, neuroscientists and cognitive psychologists and philosophers now too, they're saying, yes, but this dissatisfaction is what motivates us to make change. It is the kick in the butt that you need to think, well, this isn't good enough. I'm going to do whatever needs to be done to get another job or spend more time with my family. Or, for example, one young woman told us that when Boredom Brilliant happened, she was going through a very rough breakup and she owned a farm with her partner and had to decide, you know, should I hold on to the farm or should I chart a new course of life? And she'd been sort of putting off, making a big decision about her life when the Boredom Brilliant project came along. And in the end, she did the project and decided to keep the farm. Not only keep the farm, but she called it Make Time Farm. Mm. And in the last 2.5 years, every Sunday, she invites her community in Wisconsin to come put their phones in a basket and enjoy the nature. So they can nap, they can bring their sewing machine, they can paint, whatever they want to do. But the idea that she decided not only should her farm be her livelihood, but it also should be a way that she gives back to the community, which is incredibly powerful,
right.
You know, that just...
Well, but you think about that. I mean, those folks throwing it in the basket, they had some idea that something is not quite right. And this solution might be it. But I'm wondering how they freak out. And maybe you can shed some light on that when you tell us about some of the challenges your participants in the Bored and Brilliant Project had. What were some of the biggest challenges they had? And just in observing their behavior.
Yeah, so I would just say that, you know, I feel like technology moves so fast right now that waiting for a double-blind, controlled group study to come out when you sense that something is not right in your behavior. Yes, science is important, and we can prove a lot of the things that we are feeling, but also, you know, I figured by the time these studies came out, I would have been looking at my phone for 10 years and nobody would have said to me, as a new University of Michigan study just came out about Facebook making people feel plainly depressed. That's what we heard from a lot of people. I would say the hardest day, everyone said, was what is now challenge 4 in the book, which is delete that app. So the idea is take the app on your phone that is driving you bonkers bananas, the one that you just, you know, find yourself wanting to tap but don't feel great when you do, take it off your phone just for the day. And we had some people who say, you know what, I loved this. I'm going to do it once a month. I'm going to take this app off my phone. Twitter was a big one for that. And then we've started hearing from listeners who did the delete the app challenge who said, I took it's usually social media that they're talking about. I took them all off my phone and they're still off my phone 2.5 years because I just decided this wasn't how I wanted to live my life. Look, those are extremes, right? I'm sure there were people who were like, wait, what? Oh, yeah, I remember that day when I took off, you know, Instagram.
At that hour.
But I think there are some, you know, there are some people who this is just a problem, right, and they want to fix it.
Well, the other problem is that not only is Facebook, you know, making us sad and other social media, and perhaps because it's the content, it's also the cycle of people who are trying to break it and simply can't, right? And that makes people sad.
Mm. Yeah, and it's, you know, using the word addiction is divisive when it comes to technology right now. I'm curious to see where we are in 5 years on that one.
Yeah.
But I think for me, the idea is this is not a digital detox. I don't think on or off is the answer. This is not a binary. This is about how do we take these wonderful tools. Like I do, Frank, I will tell you, I love my phone. Mm-hmm. It makes it possible for me to be talking to you here right now, and my kids are at my mom's house and see a picture of what they're doing this morning. It's great. But we need to understand where it fits into our lives. I think so many people felt like their phones had turned into taskmasters, and they wanted to turn them back into the tools that they are meant to be, where they support our lives, that they help us do things better. They don't tell us what we should be doing.
Well, they really do reshape. I mean, reshape the way we think too. And I'll be very curious to see some of the research later on when we can look into the brains of people who've been on this. I mean, Louis C.K. talked about this a while back.
Yes.
He was talking with Conan O'Brien. Let's listen to that clip.
Nobody takes in life unless it comes through this.
Yes.
Like, whenever I see a televised event that's a huge, like the Olympics opening ceremony or a Times Square at midnight on New Year's Eve, everybody, they see seas of people all looking at it through their phone.
Yeah.
Like, there's explosions and acrobats, but they're looking at it through a little 3-inch screen.
Louis C.K. talking with Conan O'Brien a while back. I mean, that's it. We're all living now life through mediated experiences. We're not having direct experiences. Did anybody tell you, anybody who participated in this who maybe got off the stuff for a while, talk about feeling a change in the way they thought, that their thought process worked?
Yes. One young man who he has decided to keep the apps off his phone said that for him, he decided that he liked the feeling that his life was quieter and that it was more introspective, and that he lives in Los Angeles, and that, you know, he's an actor, as most people are there, I guess. But
one
for him,
another.
You know, yes, his job is performative. And so yeah. He decided he didn't want his personal life to also be performative. And so for him, it was, you know, a lifestyle choice, essentially. That's not to say that he got off these social media platforms entirely. It just means that he sits down at his laptop and puts in his 20 minutes and doesn't feel guilty about it, but then moves on with his day.
So what's the takeaway for you at this point? If somebody came up to you and said, Manoush, what do I do? How do I start, you know, coming down off of this stuff? What are some of the first steps people can take who feel that they're being controlled by all of this?
Well, I think don't ignore. Like, if you feel like it's a problem, that's you're not alone.
Yeah.
There are, I literally can point you to tens of thousands of people who agree with you and then also did something about it. And, you know, to me, the power, Frank, in just naming it and saying, like, we want to change our smartphone habits, and boredom is a human state. There are lots of human things that we do that our phone doesn't really want us to do, right? It doesn't want us to be bored. It doesn't really want you to have eye contact. It wants you to have screen contact. But these are important things, and we need to name them and call them and make sure that we make time for them in our lives. One story that really struck me was a teenager who said, you know, this feeling is really weird. I was like, what, like boredom? And they didn't recognize the sensation because if you're a teenager and you've never experienced boredom, you don't know what it's like to just sit and space out and see where your mind goes. And as the cognitive psychologist told me, it's like going to the gym, right? You need to build the muscle to be able to sit with your thoughts and figure out what you're going to do with your life. You know, it's not just about what you're going to do in the next second or the next hour. It's like I would also say that, like, this country is facing obviously some seriously divisive issues, and so if there's any time that we need our young people to do some big problem solving, it's right now. So
great stuff.
Get some
Manoush.
Boredom in your life.
Get some boredom. Be bored. but
Do
not
it.
This. This was fascinating and riveting, and there was not a boring
oh, good.
Moment in the whole time. Manoush, thank you so much for talking with us.
It was such a pleasure.
Manoush Zomorodi is the host of the WNYC Tech Podcast, Note to Self, and her new book is called Bored and Brilliant, How Spacing Out Can Unlock Your Most Productive and Creative Self. Manoush will be speaking next Tuesday, September 12th, of the James B. Hunt Library at NC State in Raleigh, and you can get more information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we preview a production of the hit musical South Pacific. Stay tuned.